Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 368. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about Roman ruins, Roman aqueducts, patron saints, as we go to Extremadura in Spain. Welcome to the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Today's episode of the Amateur Traveler is again sponsored by Viator. If you happen to be going to Spain, Viator has everything from 2 to 9 day tours of Spain and a number of different regions of Spain. So check that out at amateurtraveler.com/tours before your next trip. Before we get into this week's interview, I do have three news stories for you. The first one, American Airlines had a system-wide glitch that managed to slow down every single flight they were doing recently. We saw the same thing with the merger from Continental to United, with the merger of the two airline systems. So apparently, if you have a merger, you will have problems. And then speaking of airplane problems, United had a problem where they diverted a flight because a family on the flight complained about the in-flight movie. Now, we probably have different stories of this, but the family on the flight was not pleased with how violent the movie was. It was a PG-13 movie, and they thought that their kids, 4 and 8, should not watch it. But from their point of view, at least, all of the discussions were very civil, and they understood that the movie was still going to be shown. But apparently the captain thought there was enough of a problem that he diverted the flight and threw them off the plane. But they weren't having as bad a day as 6 TSA agents at the JFK airport. One TSA agent found a pepper spray on the floor, thought it was a laser pointer, and while, quote, playing around, decided that it was a good idea to spray 5 other agents and himself in the eyes with pepper spray. I try not to pick on the TSA, but this isn't one of those stories that makes me feel more secure. For links to all three of those stories, check out the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. I'd like to welcome to the show Sam from indefiniteadventure.com, who's come to talk to us about a place in Spain you might not have heard of. And Sam, welcome to the show.
Hi, Chris. Thanks for having me.
And I'm going to have you pronounce it because I know I'm going to do it so badly.
In Spanish, it would be Extremadura. We could say in English as Extremadura, if we like, I guess.
And can we put that on a map of Spain?
Yeah, it's in the west, the slightly southwest. It's quite a big region. To the north, you've got Castilla y León, and in the south, you've got Andalusia. To the east is Madrid, and then to the west, you've got Portugal. It's right on the border with Portugal.
Excellent. And you spent some time there, but I don't know why.
I taught English as a foreign language. That's what I've been doing for the last couple of years, actually. Mm-hmm. And I spent 3 months last year, from October to December, in Extremadura, in the capital city, Mérida, teaching English because I happened to get a job there pretty much by chance.
And we have talked about Mérida before, but not that one, the one that was named after it in the Yucatan in Mexico. But why should somebody go to Extremadura?
I think, well, if they're into history, they should definitely go for the Roman history. There's a hell of a lot of Roman history there. Mérida was, in fact, the capital of the Lusitania province of the Roman Empire. Mm-hmm. And it was one of the wealthiest cities in, I think, certainly in the Iberian Peninsula, possibly in the whole Roman Empire at one point. And it has, unusually for Spain, it has a lot of Roman ruins like right in the city, in the center of the city, which you can just walk up to and just see for free. And there are paid ones as well, but.
And that's in the capital, in Mérida.
Mérida is a small city. It's about 57,000 people. It's on a river, the River Guadiana. But it's not the biggest city in Extremadura. There's Cáceres and Badajoz, which I think are both slightly bigger, but apparently less interesting. Mérida is definitely the high point of the region.
And tell us more about Mérida.
Okay, well, as a Roman city, I think it was founded in 25 BC, and it was called then Emerita Augusta. It's now a UNESCO World Heritage Site, the old part of the city.
And so at the time it was named after the reigning Caesar, who would have been Caesar Augustus, which is a good way to get yourself in good with the with the higher-ups, as it were.
Yeah, definitely. Probably the thing that Mérida is most famous for is its theater. It has a very intact Roman theater, which is not free, unfortunately, but it's not that expensive. I think it's 12 euros for a ticket that includes six or seven of the big Roman sites. And there's no time limit on when you can see them. So you can go and see each one day over a week or over 3 months like I did. But the Roman theater is definitely the most famous one. It's very impressive, quite intact. It wasn't very busy even when I was there on a Sunday, even though it wasn't in summer. But Mérida in general is not very busy. So if you like enjoying Roman ruins in relative peace and quiet, I think it's definitely a good place to go. Standing in the theater, you can definitely imagine how it must have been during Roman times. It's quite impressive. But then that's coming from someone who hasn't seen a hell of a lot of Roman theaters. It reminded me somewhat of the ones I've seen in Turkey, actually, in the west of Turkey.
It actually reminded me somewhat of the theater and the library in Ephesus when I looked at a picture.
That's exactly the one I was thinking of. Mm-hmm. I can remember the name, yeah.
I had to double check that I wasn't looking at the wrong picture. Excellent. Now, you say that there are six or seven. Do you recall what some of the other ones are? I know that's the most well-known one.
Yeah. I mean, some people buy the ticket just to go there because that's the only ticket you can buy if you want to go into the theater. The next biggest one, or the biggest one, is the circus, the Circo Romano.
Oh, okay.
Which is just outside of the center of the city. And I found it slightly unimpressive. I mean, you can see most of it from the street. It's just surrounded by a fence and it's just a big ring, basically.
Now, do they still have some of the tunnels and such that would have supplied it underneath, or that you'd have the gladiators and those guys in?
You can see the entrances to the tunnels, but they don't seem to be, they seem to have been filled in.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The, next to it is an exhibition center, quite small, with a exhibit which I found not that interesting. It's only in Spanish, even though I speak Spanish, but I didn't find it that interesting, really. I didn't think it was that well curated. Of all the other ruins in the city, I found this one the least impressive, probably. But another one that is included in the ticket that you can visit in the city is not a Roman ruin, but a crypt of the patron saint, Santa Eulalia, or Saint Julia, I think is the English translation. She was the patron saint of the city, and you can enter into her crypt, which is kind of, I mean, crypts are generally, I guess, kind of creepy, but this one, I went there on a Sunday, actually, and there was the mass happening right above us, and you could hear everything that was going on, and there were parts where you could see through the floor and look up at the congregation.
Built right over the crypt, is what we're saying.
Yeah, it's the basilica of the same name, the Santa Eulalia Basilica, is right above her crypt. The other Roman ruins I have are free outdoor ones, so you can just walk up to them, which I think are the more interesting ones, actually.
And which are those?
Okay, there's a big aqueduct called the Aqueducto de los Milagros, the Aqueduct of Miracles, apparently because it's a miracle that it's still standing. and it's apparently the second most complete Roman aqueduct in Spain.
After Segovia, then.
Yeah, that's right. I could actually see it from my bathroom, which was nice. Part of the aqueduct is right in a park that's right by the canal that leads to the main river running through the city. And it's a really nice place to just kind of relax and hang out. And you can see storks nesting on top of the columns of the aqueduct, which are a symbol of Extremadura. The stork is, I think, their regional bird.
Okay. And then I understand that that's significant enough that it is a UNESCO World Heritage Site.
In itself, yeah, it is. And the park around it is named after the aqueduct, in fact. It's actually an aqueduct that extends out of town, obviously, to a Roman-built man-made, well, a dam which I'll talk about in a minute because it's also a nice place to visit. But in the city, there are a couple of other free things you can just walk up to and see. I mean, there are several Roman thermal baths. Mm-hmm. Some of them are quite hidden and you wouldn't be able to find them unless you had were shown by someone who knew them. But one of the biggest ones is right next to the Roman circus that I was just talking about. And I think it's probably more interesting than the circus itself. They've kind of tried to do some reconstructive archaeology to show you how it would have looked without actually changing the layout. It's a bit hard to describe. They've just kind of got these metal pillars that are essentially, you can see right through, but they indicate where the pillars would have been holding up the roof of the thermal baths. And that's right next to another aqueduct, which is less impressive than the Aqueducto de los Milagros, in my opinion. But it's also worth seeing, and it's right by the canal too, in a park. You can walk between the two aqueducts in about 10, 20 minutes in a tree-lined park by the canal, which is quite nice to do.
Okay.
Another thing, and this is right in the center of the city, and it's probably my favorite of the all the Roman ruins in Mérida, which is the Templo de Diana, the temple of the goddess Diana, who was a very important goddess in the cult of Lusitania, the cult of the region of this region of the Roman Empire. It's like a miniature Parthenon, which is really unusual in Spain. You don't see this kind of thing just smack in the middle of a city. And it's just surrounded by normal modern buildings. I didn't witness this, but apparently they put on plays on the little platform in front of the temple because there's a sort of a very small modern amphitheater opposite it, so people can sit there and watch these shows, but I never saw those.
Do those happen only certain times of the year, or you just didn't get a chance to?
I think that they are just in the summer, so I just missed them when I arrived.
Okay. We should ask, what time of year would you recommend to go? What time of year were you there?
I was there from the end of September to the end of December. Mm-hmm. And it was a good time to be there. It wasn't too hot. I mean, Extremadura, the name implies extreme hardness. That's what Extrema and Dura mean. But this time of year, it wasn't too hot. I mean, it was, at the end of September, it was still summer. It was still nice weather. And in December, for me, it wasn't cold. For the locals, it clearly was. But
then different standards.
Yeah. Two things happened whilst I was there, which were, I think, would be worth planning your visit around if you were going to Mérida. One of them was the first weekend in October was a Roman festival. And that was the very first weekend that I arrived. So it seemed a bit strange walking around the city and there were all these people dressed in Roman outfits and wreaths of ivy on their head and this kind of very stereotypical stuff. But that was fun. They were around the temple of Diana, actually, there were loads of stalls selling like handicrafts and Roman-like things and kids playing with plastic swords dressed up as gladiators. It was kind of fun to see.
Well, and I've since looked up, when you talked about the original name of the town, I caught that it was Augusta after Augustus, but the first word I didn't catch, Emerita, like emeritus, or veteran. So it was founded by veterans of Augustus's army, which I didn't catch on. Okay. And so basically these people are reenacting the town fathers.
Yeah, basically, yeah. I mean, I knew the name, the ancient name of the city when I first went there, but I only discovered what it meant a couple of days ago when I was researching it for this.
Interesting.
Another interesting day to experience in the city, which happened whilst I was there, was the 10th of December, which is the day of Santa Eulalia, the patron saint. Mm-hmm. And there are marching bands down the street. I mean, everything's closed. It's a public holiday, and this is Spain, so they take it very seriously. Everyone's out on the streets. It's very lively. The crypt of Santa Eulalia that I mentioned, which is beneath the basilica of the same name, has a temple to her just outside it, which on a normal day, you see people walking past and crossing themselves out, or they kiss their index finger. Apparently, if you're driving, you can't cross yourself. You have to kiss your finger. But on this day, the shrine to her gets completely full of flowers and gifts and offerings of all kinds of stuff. And it was just a nice day to be in the town and see everyone kind of in their Sunday best, but also in a very relaxed and friendly atmosphere.
Now, what is the geography like? I'm picturing this is mountainous because the border in between Spain and Portugal tends to be fairly mountainous.
Well, Mérida is quite flat, so if you want to cycle, it's pretty easy. But the immediate area around it is, I would say, rolling hills. It's not really mountainous. When you get further close to the border, yes, it is more mountainous. And down south, when you get towards Andalusia, it's very mountainous, actually. But the central area is, I would say, sort of rolling hills, lots of olive orchards, somewhat barren in places. It's not alpine, certainly.
Okay. What else, in terms of visiting, let's say someone comes to the city and is not as much into Roman history as I am, what sort of things would connect them to the modern day Spain in that area?
Probably the best place to start would be the main square, the Plaza de España, in the center of the city, which when I first arrived there, I found it kind of ugly, but I discovered that it was not the architecture that made it interesting in the end. It was the way people use it, what it means for the city, I suppose. Mm-hmm. This probably isn't particular to Merida. I'm sure this is the same in many similarly sized Spanish towns. But it was just a very kind of happening meeting place where everyone would hang out. I mean, even in October when the weather was getting kind of cold, people would still sit out in the cafes on the square and gossip, I suppose. And I couldn't go very far walking through the square without being roped into some kind of party or gathering of friends or colleagues and sitting down having a drink at 11 at night, not having had dinner yet.
Oh, yes. So they have the same schedule there for dinner that we've talked about on other Spain podcasts.
Oh, yes, definitely. And for me, it was kind of like jet lag. It was kind of like adjusting to a new time zone.
And does that mean that, like Andalusia, that they still take the siesta seriously?
I talked to a lot of people about this because actually I like to take a siesta, not for cultural reasons, but just for health reasons. And apparently only old people now in Extremadura take siestas.
Okay, because I know it's going away in Spain, so I was curious.
So people, I mean, everything closes for siesta, so it's still, like all the shops are closed from 2 till 5 p.m., but people apparently just go home and have lunch and watch TV and hang out.
Well, they still have the break, though, so they still are doing that. Okay, I know in Madrid, for instance, that's starting to go away.
Yeah.
What surprised you about this part of Spain?
The accent. I'd learned Spanish for 6 years at school, and I thought I spoke pretty well. Then I went here, and I realized I don't understand what these people are saying, which I'm sure happens all over the place. All over the world, in fact, but it didn't take me that long to get used to it. It's the funny thing that they do is they drop a lot of S's, so Extremadura is not pronounced as such, it's more like Extremadura. And they drop a lot of other consonants too, so instead of, for example, salado, which is salty, they would say salao. But interestingly, they like to actually make fun of their own accent, which I haven't experienced before in other places of locals laughing at their own pronunciations. And they would laugh at when I would reproduce them, of course. another thing that surprised me a lot was actually how late in the evening you see, not people, because I was expecting that in Spain, but the kids. I mean, when my partner came to visit me, he pointed this out. I didn't really notice it before, but it definitely was a surprise. Up till like midnight on a Friday, you would see young kids, 5, 6, 7-year-olds running around. I was sort of ready for bed, and these kids seem to have five times as much energy as me. But the fact that people let their kids stay up that late and run around in the town, it's just a very safe place to be. So I guess people don't have safety concerns, which is really nice too.
You had a chance to get to know the locals. You mentioned walking through the main square and not being able to walk very far before you got invited over. Which of the locals would you love for people to get to know?
Well, to be honest, most of the people that I got to know were through my work. And I guess the secretary at the school where I worked, who spoke absolutely no English whatsoever, but she was the most talkative person I've ever met. It was a great experience practicing my Spanish because I had to speak Spanish to her because she made me talk to her. She wouldn't let me not speak to her. And she was often one of the people I would just bump into in the street, and I'd end up joining her for 3, 4, 5 hours with her family and friends, eating and drinking. And she just had so much energy and enthusiasm for everything. It was sometimes exhausting, but mostly kind of inspiring.
And you mentioned eating and drinking. Any particular dishes that we should try if we're there?
Yeah, one of the typical things is jamón ibérico. Okay. And There are several kinds of goat's cheese as well that they're particularly known for. For me, that all that kind of stuff is fine, but it's not my favorite, I guess. Mm-hmm. There is actually, I do actually have a recommendation for a vegetarian restaurant in town, which is unusual to find in Spain. So I think it's worth mentioning. It was a place called Shangri-La in the old town, just around the corner from the main square, actually. It was a very sort of cozy place, quite small, with a just like a whiteboard menu, not very formal. You could go there for full meals, but they also do cake and tea and coffee. It was good food, even if you're not vegetarian. I would recommend looking it up because it's a nice place. It's definitely not typical, though.
Sure, no.
But I do think that vegetarian food is so difficult to find in Spain. I think it's worth mentioning. There are lots of places that do lunch menus, and I would suggest doing that as a way to save money when you're visiting this part of Spain. Definitely take advantage of the lunch menus because there's so much better value than eating the same things in the evening. Mm-hmm. And in Mérida, because it varies around Spain what they include. In Mérida and Extremadura, generally, they would always include a drink, a starter, a main, and a dessert, usually for 10 euros or less. I found one for as cheap as 6 euros, but that wasn't very good, so I wouldn't recommend that one. You don't have to walk 200 meters and you'll find a place advertising its lunch menu. I would go for one around 8 or 9 euros is pretty good. For Italian food, if you're particularly craving a pizza, there's a nice place called Galileo, also just around the main square, which has very good tiramisu as well.
Excellent. What do you wish you had known before you moved there?
I think I wish I'd known that people really do eat lunch and dinner that late.
It doesn't matter how many times we tell people that. It's really just hard to adjust to.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I'd heard it, of course. And mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, it'll be fine. It won't be a problem. But yeah, the first 2 weeks, it was rough. It was really trying to get into that.
You just really can't find any good place open until 9 o'clock or so, I would guess. 9 or 10.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was lucky I had my own apartment and therefore I had a kitchen. But yeah, otherwise, and I still tried to adapt to the routine because I had a job that was mm-hmm. on the local timetable anyway. So it made sense. But yeah, the first 2 weeks, that was a real challenge. But once I got used to it, it was actually quite nice.
Okay. Best day trips.
Well, there are two things that are actually really close to Mérida, which are definitely worth visiting. Both of them are dams.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned the one that the aqueduct goes to.
Mm, and that's this one called Proserpina. It was constructed by the Romans, so it's much older than the other one that I'm going to talk about. And it's used to serve as the city's main water supply. It's from there that the aqueducts used to bring water into the town. Mm-hmm. I actually walked there. It was a 1 hour walk, and it was totally forgettable. I wouldn't recommend walking it. If you have a car, that would be much better. But once you get to the lake, it's really, really beautiful. You can walk around the whole thing in about an hour. And on one side of it, there are houses. People have summer houses. But once you get a little bit way around, it's completely, you're in the countryside and there's kind of nothing. And people just on the edge of the lake fishing. In summer, I mean, I guess apparently people go swimming in there and fishing, of course, as well as the sunbathing. There is kind of a beach. There's obviously also the actual Roman dam, which is still there, and you can go right up to it, and there's a little kind of exhibit explaining how it was built and how it brought water to the city and things like that. So that's kind of interesting.
And I'm assuming it's an earthen dam, or are we talking about a stone dam?
It's stone, actually.
Is it really? Hmm.
Yeah, it was quite impressive. It's not used as a reservoir anymore. I don't think it serves that function, but the dam itself is actually very intact.
Okay, and then you said there was a second one.
Yeah, the other one is called Alange, and that's about the same distance. I went there by car with my boss, actually. That was much more sensible. And the dam is actually really ugly, but the lake itself is gorgeous, and it's much, much bigger than Proserpina. We went there around sunset, and the views were just amazing of the lake. I mean, it was so big at some parts you couldn't see to the other side. Hmm. Yeah, and that is used as a reservoir, I believe. People go windsurfing and sailing on it in the summer, and there's also an artificial beach there. There's a small town right on the lake, which has a few cafes and restaurants, and apparently in the summer there's a thermal bath there, which was closed when I went. But there's a hill right by the town with a ruined castle at the top, and you can walk up there in about 30 minutes. It's not a very strenuous walk, but the views are just amazing, especially at sunset with the reflection of the sun on the lake. It was gorgeous.
As we start to wind this down, I've got some of my usual questions. What else should we know before we go to Extremadura?
So there's one other place which we didn't get to talk about, which I'll mention briefly now, which is a national park in the north part of Extremadura, which is called Monfragüe. It's about 1.5 hours northeast of Mérida, and it's a good place to go spotting for wildlife. It's known for its vultures especially, but also foxes, deer, eagles. I went there with some colleagues, and they were fascinated by this fox that was just by the side of the road and trying to chase after it and take pictures. And I was like, what's the big deal? It's a fox coming from a city. This wasn't especially spectacular to me. But the other thing that was more spectacular, I guess, was the all the deer you could see. And they would come pretty close to the road, there's just one road that goes through this national park, which we were driving along. And we came to one point where there was an old man, I think his name was Maximilio, in case you go there. He'd been going to this particular point along the road in the park every day for years and years. And he would take a bag of bread and call the deer, and they would come running to him, well, running cautiously. He could hold the pieces of bread in his mouth, and they would come up to him and bite it out and take it from him, from his mouth directly, which is quite something to see. I'm not sure how I felt about it, but
you
it
didn't
was quite,
offer to try.
No. Some of my friends did, but no, I didn't. I mean, another reason to go to this national park is the hiking. There are lots of easy hikes, just circular hikes, mostly just off the main road, which are very well highlighted. Mm-hmm. So you can easily, if you have a car, you can easily just stop off on the side of the road and take one of those routes. And there's only one town in the park called Villarreal de San Carlos, with a few shops and maybe one hotel, but I'm not sure, so don't quote me on that. But nearby, there's another ruined castle on top of a hill, which has really great views of the park. And just to give you an idea of how big the park is, when we went up there, it was close to sunset again, so lights, if there were any lights, were coming on, but on the horizon we could see almost no lights at all, like in terms of houses or road lights, because the park went on for that far. That was quite something.
Excellent. Last four questions for you. Mm. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Extremadura.
That would probably be when it's 18 degrees in December.
And people are complaining how cold it is.
Yeah. And they're wearing their coats and scarves and gloves, and I'm wearing shorts.
And you grew up in England?
In London, yeah.
In London, okay. Okay. You're standing in the most beautiful spot. Where are you standing and what are you looking at?
I think one of them will be in Mérida, in the city, and it will be on the bank of the river, overlooking the three bridges, the Roman bridge in the middle, the modern highway bridge to the left, and the Lusitania bridge, which is a sort of a modern bridge, with white bridge with an arch and a raised part for pedestrians. And it's the sun is setting over the river, and there are flocks of birds flying overhead, and there's a clear blue sky, and the sunlight is coming down behind me on the walls of the Roman ruins.
Excellent. Last two questions. Finish this sentence. You really know you're in Extremadura when what?
When it's midnight, you've just had dinner, you're looking at your watch and yawning and thinking, I need to go to bed. And there are 5-year-olds running around screaming their heads off because they've got so much energy. And you feel ridiculous that you're tired.
And if you had to summarize the region in 3 words, what 3 words would you use?
I think I'd go for friendly, mm-hmm. Roman, mm-hmm. and remote. Hmm. It's pretty remote from the rest of the country.
It doesn't seem like it's going to get a lot of tourists, especially foreign tourists.
Yeah, I mean, one of the big reasons to go through is if you're walking on the Via de la Plata, which is one of the mm-hmm. roads to Santiago.
One of the north-south routes.
Yes, yeah. Mm-hmm. It goes from Seville up to Santiago, and that goes through a large part of Extremadura. Mm. It's a good alternative to a typical visit to Spain. mostly because it's much less well known. So because it's less touristed, you're going to have these attractions to yourself. Like I said about the Roman theater, that it's not very busy even at the weekend and high season. It's also cheaper because of those things.
Sure. Right. Sam, where can people read more about your travels?
You can find my blog that I write with my partner Zab at indefiniteadventure.com, which by the time this podcast is released should have a brand new face. And you can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/indefiniteadventure.
Excellent. Sam, thanks for coming on the show and sharing with us your love for, and I'll try and say it one more time, Extremadura.
Very good, Chris. No, thank you. It was a lovely experience.
In news of the community, in response to Travel to Toulouse, France, episode 367, I heard from Savio, who said, I discovered the Amateur Traveler podcast a few years ago. I travel every chance I get and have enjoyed listening to some of the episodes before my trips to various places. Thank you. Toulouse happens to be a place that I've visited several times. I always find France very different once you are out of Paris. Just a few things I would like to add. Toulouse, like a number of towns in this area of France, has a strong connection to the Cathars. The history of this Christian sect is fascinating and worth looking up. And I absolutely agree with that. And my brief summary of the Cathars in that episode should by no means be considered authoritative. 2, the metro subway system in Toulouse is fully automatic. It would have been good to know this before my first ride, as I was wondering where the driver was. 3, inside the Capitole de Toulouse, there are some fine 19th century artworks. Entry is free. 4, St. Cyranin Basilica in Toulouse is an important stop for pilgrims who take the southern route on their way to Santiago de Compostela. The basilica also offers free concerts in the summer. Albi is a short ride from Toulouse. I think it was just over an hour. Its cathedral, built after the defeat of the Cathars there, is one of the biggest brick buildings in the world. 6, Arles is a bit further, but it is possible to do in a day. The train ride is just over 3 hours. Arles was an important port city under the Romans. However, it is better known for the place where Vincent van Gogh lost his ear. And the Roman arena in Arles is also impressive. Thanks so much for your feedback, Savio. With that, we're going to end this episode of The Amateur Traveler, and I think I still need your help with surveys. If you haven't filled out a demographic survey that will help me sell sponsorships for the show to help pay for the expenses of The Amateur Traveler, I would appreciate it. amateurtraveler.com/survey. If you have any questions or comments on this episode, feel free to do as Savio did and leave them on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. Or you can send me an email to host@amateurtraveler.com. You can also follow me on Twitter @ChrisTuX. And as always, thanks so much for listening.